direct from the Los Angeles Underground. Open your ear holes for The Superiority Complex, a Guano production.
Welcome back to the Superiority Complex, everybody. You know, and I say welcome back because I know you just listen to these. I know a lot of you guys just listen to them, start over, and just keep listening over and over so that I'm on an endless loop in your head, and that's really where I want to be. My guest today, I'm going to cut right to the chase. My guest today is a raconteur. He has dabbled in the world of voiceover. He is probably second only to myself, one of the greatest hecklers I've heard of of opposing teams at Dodger Stadium. He's a former East LA scuba diver. He is, while I say I represent Southern California, Los Angeles, he is the real deal. He was born in the streets of East Los Angeles, raised. He's got Dodger blue pumping through his veins. He was a former bat boy. That's not true.
Yeah, very close.
He was Tommy Lasorda's house boy for a couple of seasons.
Mr. Lasorda, can I help you? Can I help you with the soda?
Jesse Nunez is here.
Hey, what's going on?
For some of you might know Jesse. Jesse had the unfortunate... he unfortunately, through a series of horrible events, married into our family.
He was
not born into it like the rest of... but I think that's why we get along, because he's always a nice observer of... He's the watcher. He watches from the outside and looks at him and breaks everything down for us.
I think I provide a very good perspective.
It's always
your
nice
family.
To get his perspective. But he is witness to like the craziness of my extended family, which we've discussed on the show.
Oh, have you discussed it on the show?
Just a little bit here and there. Okay. But not too much. You know, I always tell say, you know, those people didn't sign up to be on my, you know, they didn't sign up to get talked about. But, you know, I just tell stories from being a kid or, you know, getting hit with my grandma's shoe. Like that kind
well,
of stuff.
You know, your grandma was – I had the fortunate pleasure of knowing your grandmother, and she was a beautiful lady. Always made sure that I had something to eat.
Yes.
You hungry? You hungry? And I would say, no, no, I've already eaten. Are you sure? And then I'd sit down at the little table she had right there on the inside, and then –
two kitchen tables in that
Yes,
kitchen.
Two kitchen tables in the kitchen, which was pretty amazing. Symmetry was really important at your grandmother's house, apparently. And – one on each side of the refrigerator, which was funny. And then after about 10 minutes, she'd look at me and she'd go, are you hungry? And then I would say yes on that occasion. And then she would have one of your aunts bring me something, which was
Eleanor. My only three.
Eleanor, he's hungry.
I can't do my grandma's voice anymore because I can't do the falsetto. Too much rock band. But what I used to be able to do, a three-word impersonation of my grandma, and it was when you would work at the corn stand and then you'd crash out on the couch for about 3 hours because you were so tired. And I remember I would always stumble into the kitchen like half asleep, my hair's a mess. And my grandma would look at me and go, she would look at me and say, were you asleep? Like that.
What are you asleep? I'm basically doing your grandmother, and I also that's the voice I use for my mother, so just so you know.
Your parents are beautiful, lovely people.
They
don't
are
make fun
people.
Of your mom.
I only get one. I make fun of her all the time.
Now, you, Jesse, like my friend Robert, who we talk about on the show a lot, a father of four
children.
How's that going?
I would recommend two for most people.
One is good, man.
Well,
one.
That's right. You have one. Two is good. You know, three, you know, I like to tell my third child, who is just a beautiful child. But nevertheless, I tell her
she is a human tornado.
She is a tornado. She is a whirlwind of energy. But I always tell her if she was the first, she'd be the last. I say it in Spanish so that she doesn't understand what I'm saying.
That's a good one.
And then she says, "You're talking about me in Spanish."
Yeah. Now, are you teaching the kids, or do they not know? Or because you are fluent.
I am what they call fully bilingual.
Mm-hmm.
So that means I can butcher two languages at the same time.
I'm fluent in kitchen Spanish, which we all But that's it.
You know, I know a lot of non-Mexican, non-Latinos who speak a lot of good kitchen Spanish.
That's it.
It's important.
But my daughter, now she's telling me I want to know, and I was like, we used to try to talk to you in Spanish, and you would.
The challenge that you have, and I have great debates with your cousin. I have great debates about
nameless.
This. Who shall remain nameless? But she's a beautiful woman. And hi, honey. Anyway,
I'm not going to say when we were recording this so I don't get you in trouble.
Perfect. But I'll probably put it on my Facebook and then she'll see it. And then I'm like, great.
Just won't tell her when we recorded it.
True. No, I'll say it was before the divorce.
Yeah,
when I was very happy.
When she wasn't at home with four kids. She wasn't at home by herself.
Right. But the interesting thing about Spanish and teaching that to children is, you know, I think sometimes people equate that with being Latino. And quite honestly, it's not about Latino has nothing to do with language. It has more to do with culture.
Yes.
And so that's a big challenge for a lot of people to sort of get their head around because it has you know, you can have a like, you know, 15-year-old girl, 14-year-old girl ready for their quinceañera and she's going to be you know, making sure that she has nothing but what's on Kiss FM or Power 106 or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be you know, all the contemporary stuff. And it has nothing to do with the language necessarily, but it has everything to do with the culture.
That is funny because that, like, you, every time I see a quinceañera, we didn't have those in my family. So I almost feel like we for some reason, even though my grandfather came from Mexico.
Well, it's because you had it's you and two brothers.
Yeah. So. Well, no, I mean, none of the girls in the family. None of my cousins had. We didn't. But I think it was because my grandpa was so he just didn't come from that. You know, he came when he was 8 years old, and he didn't have time to be, I don't think, you know, sort of inundated with the culture before he got here, you know?
I think your grandfather's story, for those of you who don't know, Mario's grandfather was a very, very interesting man. I think a great example of an American success story. And Mario should write the book one day.
No, my godmother should write the book. She knows all the stories.
Right. Like I said, I think Mario should write the book because he'll have the funny stories. About like how your cousin Ernie fell off the truck or tractor, I think.
See, that's why I got to get – what I wanted to do, and I did a little bit of it when we had our reunion. I got some stories and I put them on here and I released it. And it got a good response and I want to sit down and just kind of get everybody's memories while everybody's still fresh, you know.
Well, some of your family members are while wholly alive, when I put that in quotes. Some of them, you know, dare I say, after years of ingesting natural products into their system, have what I would call memory lapses. There's giant black holes there.
Well, you know, but the thing about growing up with a family that's so large is that we really have two generations. So, you know, like my godmother, you know, and my brothers are from a completely different generation than I was. And they have a different memory of my grand. Even my parents, they have a different memory of my parents than right. I did. So it's just a matter of saying I'm going to do it and actually doing it, you know, and getting people to sit down and pin them down in one spot.
I'm hoping this is a good first step for you.
Well, this is – I'm glad to have you here. I'm glad you volunteered. I was out of guests and you volunteered and I had I have a backup that I use and she's on vacation.
I'm glad I was able to fill in for the filler.
Well, I was surprised that you reached out, and I was like, well, thanks, I appreciate it. But everybody, we all know your golden tones from many commercials on Spanish radio.
Spanish radio, English language television, English language radio.
Give us a little bit of give us your latest. What we've heard you in recently?
Recently, I was the brains, the brains and the voice behind the Pizza Loca commercials. So that was my idea. For all of you looking for. Who were really excited about seeing men in aprons and nothing else making pizzas.
Oh, we talked about this on the way to the Dodger game. That was your big
– That was my latest –
How'd it go over?
Incredibly well. Incredibly well with the targeted audience, which was women 18 to 49. I like to think of them as much as anything, you want to have a vision of who you're speaking to when you do these commercials. And in that case, that was a woman who was about – you know, 38, thinking she's still, you know, 29.
Yeah.
Right? And forgetting maybe for a second that she's got three kids.
Yeah. The lady that wears full makeup to the gym.
Full makeup to the gym and has stretched the limits of spandex in ways that we can only think that the manufacturer never thought.
So can you give us a little bit of your last give us an example of some of your
The Spanish stuff that's easy because I do Spanish announcer voice guy which would
yeah
be,
let's hear that
Spanish announcer voice guy let's pitch a product
pitch Dodgers on Time Warner because I can't get it
got it
mis amigos aquí estamos ya listos todos para el juego de los Dodgers aquí en Time Warner Cable aparentemente para todos ustedes que no pueden recibir Time Warner Cable llámenle a Time Warner Cable por favor.
That would be the Spanish.
That's beautiful. A little Jaime Harin in there.
A little Jaime Harin. I like to think of when I'm doing that voice of the, you know, when growing up listening, you know, watching my father fix everything in the house, he would always have the radio on and just, I remember those. That was the way they did commercials.
Yeah.
You know, anything.
Everything was super loud. Water.
You know, it's agua. It's not, you know, just agua. You know, it's just, it had to be that way. You know?
LA Curacao.
La Curacao. Although now they're just Curacao.
The reason I call it LA Curacao is because I worked for a company and they were a client of ours and everybody would call it LA Curacao. I was like, it's la.
Well, you know, that's always the interesting thing of, you know, you think of like, it's a way of identifying people, right? Because yeah. I grew up, on, as you mentioned, actually in the jewel of East LA, which is Northeast LA's own El Sereno.
Oh, beautiful.
I grew up in El Sereno, which is funny because in Italian that means the serene one. So, of course, that's where I should be coming from.
Yeah, of course. Right?
And when you'd go to Pasadena, you would we'd go up Los Robles. And technically it should be Los Robles, right? But we'd say Los Robles. And then we'd encounter people that would say, hey, yeah, I was just over there. We went up the street, Los Robles. and we'd all be like, where the hell is it? I'm not familiar with that street.
You know what's funny, though, is you find yourself, though, it's almost like I do that, too. Having grown up in La Mirada, you don't say La Mirada unless you're talking to your mom or your grandma or something.
I'm in the marketing business, so I remember having a meeting with this woman from this agency, is a Hispanic agency, and she says, you know, she wasn't, you know, it became clear she wasn't from around here or didn't grow up in Southern California because she was, the entire meeting we were talking about marketing to Latinos and what have you. And she says to me, oh, I was just in San Pedro. And I said, this weekend? And she says, yes, this weekend. And I said, wow, okay. That's amazing. I go, what's the weather like right now? I would never think of going there. You know, just for the weekend. She goes, it was amazing. And I said, oh, okay. And I said, how long was the plane ride? And then she looked at me all puzzled and she said, no, right here next to San Pedro. I mean, next to Long Beach. And I said, oh, you mean San Pedro. And then she looked at me like, you at the end of the story you'll hear that I didn't get the sale, right? Because of course I decided to try to win her over by insulting her. But I told her, I said, oh, I go, you know, out here everybody refers to it as San Pedro. I go, the only San Pedro that I know of is San Pedro de Macorís, because, you know, Pedro Guerrero is from there, and that's what Vin Scully always says, San Pedro de Macorís. And so, I'd probably go to the Dominican Republic and call it San Pedro de Macorís, and they're going to look at me like, what the hell's wrong with you? Dude, do you not speak Spanish? So anyway, that's the fun part.
The DR.
Yes.
The DR.
Yeah, but which is no longer the place to get ball players from now.
No.
Our Dodgers are now picking everybody up from Cuba.
Cuba.
Yeah.
That's nice. Well, you know, Castro's kind of, you know, he's on, you know, the whole Castro regime there. They haven't. It wasn't what it was. I can't talk today.
Listen. Apparently, nobody read the second book by Karl Marx, which was called "I'm Just Kidding."
Oh, it's beautiful. But yeah, they're all. You know, they're relaxing their restrictions. Well, they don't even care anymore. They don't even come after defectors. What are you going to do?
Well, it's not like you're going to come to this country and, you know, invade. Invade a portion of our country. Oh, wait, that's what Putin's doing. I'm sorry. Yeah, scratch that. Yeah, okay, that could be possible, I suppose.
He already did it in Mexico. They've got the Russian enclave down there.
The Russian enclave is probably seven people.
Yeah. It's down there.
It's down there.
It's down there. It's down in, what is it? What the heck's the name of that city?
In DF. Well, there's a bunch of Ruskies in DF. Mm-hmm. There's a, you know, it's fun. I mean, Mexico had its own, you know, immigrant experience, just like this country had, you know, with Italians and Germans and what have you. I mean, we have Bohemia beer because of the German immigrant.
Yeah, sure.
On the
when you've been invaded by every other country,
you're going to pick up a couple things, right?
Pick up some stuff.
Polka bands and beer.
Yeah, polka bands from mariachi music.
And did really, who got the short end of the stick? I think, you know, look, you know, I think we got good beer and good Norteño music. And,
yeah.
You know,
We win.
And they got Angela Merkel. So I think we win on that one. I'm just saying.
I don't even know where to go with. I know she doesn't like back rubs. I know Merkel doesn't like that.
No background. And apparently, you know, what's funny about her is that she is so has such an austere look, right?
Mm-hmm.
That I think she should have been like a CCD teacher.
All Germans look that way.
I know.
They're Germans.
Yeah,
they're not known for their sense of humor.
No.
The Germans.
No, but that Michael Schumacher guy was pretty funny.
Yeah, there you go.
But now he's not funny anymore. I'm sorry. I don't know why we got onto Michael Schumacher. I'm sorry. I'm sure for all you Grand Prix Formula One racer people,
Excited. They're excited.
No. They're not excited about Michael.
Well, I'm just saying they're excited that we're talking about it finally. Finally, we're going to talk some Formula One.
Yeah, all
right. We're going to talk Long Beach Grand Prix right here.
Wow, that was cool.
20 minutes.
That was really interesting.
There's always one last guy that's just.
Yeah, I know. So, because he's a show off, he just wants to get the one thing. So he's not part of the.
He's like 5 seconds later. He's.
He's like, what happened, man?
If I were really better on this board, I would have given the Doppler effect there with the two going across.
But the stereo. That would have been great.
So, guys, rewind it about 30 seconds, and then when Jesse does that, just move the balance back and forth, left to right, left to right, left to right.
Left to right. That'll sound more impressive.
It'll sound like
a New Order record.
Like, we just talked about New Order on the. How do you feel about New Order?
I think they're one of the greatest bands alive.
Thank you! You know what? Out of the 80s, I'm not a huge 80s guy, but I love New Order, and they always have to take a backseat to Depeche Mode. I feel they're superior.
I would agree with you.
Thank you. We just did our anniversary show with my friend Hiddish, who you know.
Yes.
And we talked about 80s music, and Hiddish was a big New Order fan back in the day. And
My favorite bands from the 80s were XTC.
Oh, there you go.
By a guy named Andy Partridge, and then Elvis Costello. New Order's probably third.
There you go. What was XTC's big hit?
Senses Working Overtime, yeah, Dear you. God, Generals and Majors.
That was the first one.
Yes. Making Plans for Nigel. They got a lot of stuff.
Yeah. There's a lot of great bands that came out of the 80s. I think people look back, you know, because they have a tendency, we talked about it ad nauseum, but they have a tendency to think of the 80s as the Go-Go's and Michael Jackson and Duran Duran, and that's it. But there was a lot of
goodness. I refer to those people as uneducated. I'm just kidding. I'm sure you're beautiful people.
Seek out. You know, there's a lot of great bands. Sonic Youth came out in the 80s. There's a lot of really great bands. Seek them out.
LA had its own little neo-psychedelic scene.
Yep.
Right? That was a really lot of fun. You know, there's a lot of interesting people that came out of there. The 3 O'Clock, the Long
I forgot.
Riders,
Jesse's a musician as well. I forgot to mention that at the top of that.
Yes.
To start.
I like the word multi-instrumentalist.
The multi-talented. You're really a Renaissance man.
Yes, and if we were living in the Renaissance, I'd be a richer man. To be quite frank.
But you are Latino.
I'd be appreciated more. You know what? You're right. I am Latino, so it is par for the course. It's like, you know, I play guitar. Of course you do.
Of course you do.
Hey, I can fix your water heater. Of course you can.
Of course you can. Si se puede.
Si se puede. Definitely.
I finally heard a good joke about a good racist joke of a Mexican racist.
Was this from your brother?
No. I heard it the other day. How many Mexicans does it take to screw in? Oh, hey, they're done already.
Very good.
That was kind of pro-Mex. I was like,
yeah no, that's pro-Mex.
I'm slightly pleased with that.
Yeah, definitely.
We do end up talking about being brown on this show a lot, and I always do it with my white guests. I don't know why.
Is that to remind them of the fact that we are now the majority in the state?
You know what? Here's what's funny, Jesse. Like, I was telling somebody, people freak out. I love it because I work in the very conservative county of Orange, and people are always freaked out. Like, oh, there's so many, and they see the Latino majority. They don't understand we all hate each other. They don't understand. All they have to do to incite something is to say, ask a Mexican if he's Guatemalan. It all comes apart.
You know, it'll all fall apart. We're only Latino in the face of, you know, of racism. And then once that falls apart, you're like, I hate that guy.
First of all, we all hate the Argentines.
Well, it's not that. It's just that, you know, they live in an interesting country, but they believe that they have no indigenous blood in them for the most part. And so because they raped and pillaged. They didn't rape and pillage. They just pillaged. And so they killed everybody, the indigenous folks that live in Argentina. But and I'm giving short shrift to their history, obviously. But It's just like that. Just,
yeah. So we so top of the heap. We all hate them. All the other.
I believe as a collective force, we all hate Argentinians for the most part. I have a couple of good Argentinian friends, but I tell them, I said, "Man, you've become so Mexican."
Yeah, that's they really love brings them down.
They love that.
Just bum them out.
Several self esteem.
Yeah, up. All of the people in the islands, they all hate each other. The Dominicans, they all hate.
Well,
each
the
other.
Dominicans hate the Haitians. Hate, you know, there's all, right it's a pecking
next,
order.
They're right
all,
next door.
It's all a pecking order.
Cubans hate the Puerto Ricans. Everybody hates the Mexicans because we're the best.
Well, then, I think that's the part of the problem is that when we're 80% of the diaspora, look at that.
Yeah.
Big word. When we're 80% of the diaspora, I think that's a big it's a big thing. But, you know, for us being of Mexican descent, mm-hmm. OMD. we're talking about 80s bands, so
secret.
I thought I'd throw that in.
Enola, I got a secret that brings all the meaning of the words to the song Secret.
Right, Secret. Or Enola Gay, think about it as well.
I got a secret, and I'm wanting to tell.
Another big hit for them, Enola Gay. I love it.
Tesla Girls.
Oh, yeah, Tesla Girls.
My friend Robert bastardized into testicles. So if you sing testicles, testicles, and then you sing the words, sometimes they speak to me.
Was he using this microphone?
He was. Oh, may true. Have been using that one or that one.
I
have four. I rotate them.
I hopefully it's sanitized.
I do it for health reasons. I rotate
that's
the mics.
Good. No, but when we're that large a chunk of the diaspora, people are just going to feel.
Well, and I think another thing that we end up talking about is the rift between the Mexican born in Mexico and those of us Chicanos who refer to ourselves as Mexican, but meaning of Mexican descent.
No, it's different. So it's Mexicano, and then I like to refer to us as Mexican, because we tend to bastardize that word, too.
Yeah.
No, we really, truly are a people who can butcher two languages at the same time.
It's true.
You know, the proper use for a car is a coche or automóvil, and we decide
carro.
To use carro.
Yeah.
And instead of brakes are supposed to be frenos, and we go with brecas, right? To park the car is to estacionar.
Parquear.
But we say parquear.
¿Dónde parqueaste?
¿Dónde vamos a parquear? And I think, you know, but that's the beauty of being living in this duality that we live in, you know, that and I think it's sometimes a challenge for, you know, I'm in the media business, so a lot of times entities that come from Mexico or Argentina or Colombia, those are tend to be the big producers of media, seem to think that they can bring that style or those type of that type of content to this country and be successful. And I tell them it's a tough road to hoe because people have a different experience here.
Yeah,
what exists in those countries is still a form of class, you know, warfare.
Mm-hmm.
That's greater than here in this country. And I know we complain about class warfare here in the United States, but
it
over there
it really doesn't exist.
It's not a caste society, like in India, but pretty damn close in a lot of those countries. So if you're born, you know, the bottom of this, you know, the spectrum is going to be an Indio, right? That's how they refer to people who are native. You know, if you're born an Indio, there's a 95% chance, 99% chance you're going to die an Indio.
Yep.
And so
that's it.
I tell people come to this country not because they want to be American necessarily, but they come here for the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Now their children become American and become this sort of this interesting, you know, dichotomy in the sense that you've got these two cultures coming at you. What you hear at home from mom and dad or more often than not from mom, and what you hear out in school. You know, we've abolished bilingual education in this state.
Yeah.
You've got 2 million kids going into public education. So that means at least last August? I believe we were early for once on this projection. But we're now – we represent 50% plus one of all the kids in public education. That's 1 million kids going to school every year that are learning primarily in English, right? Or almost exclusively in English. So that's going to produce some interesting results in the coming years. All of the growth that's coming for the Latino population is coming from native born, meaning, you know, born in this country.
Yeah.
So it's a challenge for people to kind of get their head around. And it's not like we're coming in and taking over and doing, you know, wreaking havoc. It's not like we're, you know, exacting revenge. Although I would like to have a casino or two, because our Native American brethren really scored on that.
They did, man.
But you know what? They put up with a lot of shit. Can we use that word? By the way,
of course, you can swear.
I'm sorry. I mean, they put up with a lot of shit, and so when I hear people, you know, talk about how good they have it, I'm like,
are you kidding me?
Yeah, really? I always think of that.
There's a reason you have to drive to the desert to go to one of their casinos, because that's the land we gave
them.
Did
you notice next to San Manuel is a state mental institution?
Let's drive out.
Didn't pick up on that, right?
Let's drive out to the goddamn desert. The desert. There's nothing out there. You ever drive down to? It's all the crappiest land in California. It's like, you guys go live over there on your reservation. We'll be over here.
We'll be over here.
By the beach.
You guys got your own spot. Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Nothing grows.
Nothing grows.
It's like the surface of the moon.
It's, yeah, and so I always laugh. But, yeah, I don't think we're going to get a casino out of this deal. But nevertheless, you know, it's going to be an interesting, you know, challenge. You know, we have the Cesar Chavez movie is out.
Yeah. Right?
And, you know, what I find very interesting about that is, you know, for a lot of politicians, I think they need to ask themselves or maybe look in the mirror and see what would Caesar do?
Yeah, right? Sure.
Because more often than not, like, you know, we've got the Calderon family, which is going to be part of my next blog post.
You do have a blog, and it's called The Son of Los Angeles.
The Son of Los Angeles, and the author of it is El Los Angelino, spelled correctly. Because I hate when people spell Angelino and it's within two E's. That's wrong. Anyway, Los Angelino is going to talk about how the Calderon family reminds me of the Corleone family.
You're giving yourself away as the author of the blog.
I know, and I tried not to do that,
but I can edit this out.
No, this is a shocker.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. I have him here, the Son of Los Angeles. But it is. Check it out. And where can we check that out?
You can go to thesonoflosangeles.com. I wasn't very creative with the web address, but I thought I'd be specific.
We're going to take a quick break. Just when we come back, we're going to keep talking about the influence that the brownies are going to have. That's what I call us.
We're going to have our own troop.
We're going to have our own troop of brownies. And we're going to talk about your blog, and we're going to talk about some more stuff. So we'll be right back.
Are we pausing for commercial interruption?
Well, you know what I do? I pause. I do a little music, and it's just to give. I'll tell you what. I started asking people for feedback, and they said, if you could just do a break, because I listen at work, and I'm like, you know you can just pause it, right? You know it's like you can pause and come back to it. But it helps people. So what I do is I put in a little musical cue.
If you'd like, if you put a little music, I'll do a commercial for you.
You want to do a commercial right now?
Yeah, yeah. What's the exact – who's the producer of the show?
Me.
Oh, that's right.
You want to do a commercial? You know what? I'm gonna have you do a commercial for my friend, store.
Okay.
Let's
take a break. We'll do a commercial, and then we come back, and
let's do a commercial. I'll throw a commercial in here with Jesse doing that. We'll have to find out commercial music though.
Nah, no problem. All right.
I'm sticking gum in my mouth, so that means it's gonna be time for a break. We'll be right back.
I'll drink some water.
Drink some water.
Mis amigos, cuando quieren buscar libros cómicos, por favor, visiten a nuestros amigos Sue y Mike, ahí en Undercity Comics, en la 11219 First Avenue, en la ciudad de Whittier, California. Undercity Comics, lo mejor de los libros cómicos.
We're back on the break, everybody. We recorded an awesome... Jesse did a really good job with that... I don't know how you do that. Jesse was kind enough. I worked for Jesse for a little while. He was kind enough to hire me when I really needed a gig. And I did some work at his company, Hyperactive Media. And I did a voiceover for, I know I got to do, it was, what was the healthcare company you had that was your client?
Citizens Choice.
It was Citizens Choice Healthcare. And what was it? It was like they were. It was like an Olympics thing. It was
a
gold medal.
That's right. Go for the gold.
Go for the gold. And Jesse let me record something where in the background I yelled, "Si se puede!"
Yes, it was Mario's finest moment.
My commercial. So let's look for that commercial.
I believe it was your debut and your last piece of work. Right?
I have done. My debut was actually for a friend of mine who did a commercial for. It was how to. It was not having a second refrigerator. It was for an energy conservation program, and he submitted a commercial, and it won. So I think they used it, and it was my voice doing the voice. It took so many takes. I could not. I
try to be a one-take wonder because usually I'm paying for the thing, so I generally will try to be a one-take
yeah,
wonder.
It sounded like I was like, oh, yeah, I'll come in and do it. And it was – it was not. It did not go as well as it, but it did. It didn't make.
I can do the you know, over the, let's see, overanalyzed Anglo voice.
Oh, here we go. This is from he's reading a book from my my daughter's school here. Go ahead.
Anything is possible. If you can dream it, you can achieve it. February 25th, 2014. Let's take a listen from some of the lyrics from "Anything Is Possible" by Journey.
That was really Casey Kasem.
Thank you. That's my hero, man. So
Casey.
You know, it's funny that Casey Kasem is Lebanese, I believe. Right?
Is that true?
Yes.
So he likes women. Thank you. That was my joke.
That's very good. Because I didn't know the Lebanese had an issue with that.
That's the kind of – no, you know, if a girl's Lebanese, isn't that the –
So they didn't have an 8.5 by 11 in the picture?
No,
That's sorry, obtuse, not
we're,
radio reference.
We're referencing something that happened. This is not a video podcast, by the way.
No, that's unfortunate. We can make it one.
I have a face for radio, so that's the way we're going to keep it.
And so do I.
No, you're a handsome devil. So we were talking before the break about, by the way, you just brought something up, the voiceover work of the commercial I did. Chris Graham, who did that commercial, his film Noble Fur debuted this past weekend at Cinequest Film Festival in San Jose. So good luck to Chris. We're going to have him on in a couple of weeks. He's going to let us know how everything went. So his the world premiere of his movie, Noble Fur. So you can go check that out on Facebook, the Noble Fur page. But good luck to Chris. I hope you had it. I did get to text him briefly, and he said everything went well and that he was blown away to have his work. And Chris was with us with his actors here. They did an episode with us. And so it was his world premiere, and it went really, really well. So can't wait to have him here to talk about it. Sorry to digress from our current guest, Jesse.
No, it's okay. I have self-esteem.
Yeah. Listen, you premiere a movie, I'll talk about it, all right?
No problem.
We mentioned your blog, so, you know.
That's true.
Equal.
The Son of Los Angeles.
It's all shared. Now, how long have you been writing this blog, Jesse?
I have been writing it since 2011.
Now, you've contributed to some local publications here in Los Angeles.
Pocho.com. What else? A couple of other things.
Why don't you have the gig that the dude at the Orange County Weekly has? Why don't you have that gig?
Gustavo Arellano?
Yeah.
Gustavo Arellano is a very, very funny man. That would be great. But he cornered the market with Ask a Mexican.
Yeah,
he didn't say Ask a Mexicans. Yeah. You know, so there's not room. There's not room for other people in his.
Although you would think that's the way he would have written it.
Mine would be Ask a Mexican. That's spelled Metsican.
I feel like you would be perfect. I feel like whenever I read him, I hear your voice.
Is my voice?
I hear your voice.
Now which voice?
Just your voice.
Spanish radio announcer voice.
Your usual acerbic kind of that sarcastic tone that you usually.
I try to make sure that I use that judiciously, which in my case would be all the time.
But I do like that he's writing for the Orange. And, you know, obviously the people that you want to read those columns aren't going to read the OC Weekly anyway. But
correct.
I feel like he's in the right spot. I feel like that's
no. Look, he's actually. I think if I'm not mistaken, he's also involved with the Border Town project that Lalo Alcaraz is also working
the
on.
Cartoonist.
Yep, they're working with Seth MacFarlane's project called Border Town.
Oh, very nice.
It's about a border town, hence the name. They're pretty genius there. But yeah, they're working on that. They're in the writing group.
You know, it's funny. I know this isn't part of your world, but there's a lot of. I mean, he's a cartoonist, but in the world of comics right now, there are a lot of comic book artists coming from Latin America right now. A lot of them.
No, definitely. And there's the two brothers Hernandez, I think, that do pretty interesting work. Obviously, Lalo Alcaraz, we already mentioned, he does a lot of stuff. You know, there's a lot of cats that are working. That field, and I think you know, we've always had a tradition of being you know, sangrones.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it sort of fits in with our whole vibe as a people, because nobody condemns other people like Latinos, like actually like Mexicans. Man, we can We just feel that it's part of our duty.
Yeah, we have.
You know, the guy can be like a NASA engineer, and you're like, oh, who is that guy? I can weld. Shit. I can weld too, man.
Mira,
you know, you're like, dude, yeah, but you know, you've got a PhD. PhD, me too. I went to Yale. You went to Yale? No, jail, man. Oh, okay. That's a different Yale. I'm just going to tell you that right now.
We do like to bring people down a peg, don't we? We do like to just bring them down.
I believe we our service to the human race is to provide everyone with a bit of humility. That's why God put Mexicans on the planet.
That is a good way to bring it down. What do you? Oh, it's true.
Because no matter how, you know, you can have a cousin, you know, my brother, Harvard educated physician, you know, he still gets shit from my family, you know. Except when they need an opinion.
Right? Except when something's wrong. What's this love?
Oh, you know, my cousins will call, hey, do you have your brother's number? I'm like, oh, is this for a first consult or a second opinion? well, it's because I go, no. I don't want to hear what's wrong. Just answer my question. Is this for a first consult or a second opinion? I go, did you go to the doctor first? No. Okay. Don't call my brother. Let me give you my sister-in-law's number because she's a much better person with bedside manner. Because Felix will tell you that you've got cancer.
Just instantly.
No
matter what it is.
No matter what I've got this kind of like thing in my earlobe. Yeah, cancer. Okay. Super.
Now, can you tell us back in the day when you and your brother, is this the brother you would play East LA Scuba with? How many brothers do you have?
I have two brothers.
Two brothers.
And we would play East LA Scuba and Kitty Cat Parachute. Okay. That was the other game we used to play.
Let's tell the people, because the first time you told me this story, I literally, I couldn't stop laughing for hours and hours. What,
like the visual.
What was East LA Scuba?
So we were latchkey kids. That's what they called it later, but we were just, you know.
Mexican kids.
Right?
Mom and dad worked.
Mom and dad worked. And so we were left to our own devices. And
Latchkey kids were the white kids whose parents worked.
Yeah. Like
we were, that's like, when it was an epidemic, right?
It was like, there's latchkey kids everywhere. I'm like, well, that was us.
Yeah. We were always.
Were we criminals?
Yeah.
But we would just leave the back door open. That's what we would do. But I'm like, you have a key? You got a key to your house? What is that about?
Scroll in the window. Your bathroom window doesn't open.
We knew every window that opened in our home. So we were left to our own devices, and we would come home, and it would range from, you know, having 30 kids in our driveway playing baseball, you know, to lobbing mud bombs over the neighbor's over our fence at their neighbor's car, and
good clean fun.
A lot of good clean fun. But one of the things we would do, two of the things that I'd always remember was East LA Scuba, where we would empty out the trash cans that we had. We didn't have like the service where you get your own trash cans now. Everybody had their own trash cans back then. So we would empty out the trash cans and fill them full of water. And we discovered one day, my mom, what possessed her to, they were obviously on sale, right? The flexible straws. And we discovered that much like what you find on Aquaman or whatever show we picked it up from, we emptied the trash cans out and we would go in there. We'd get our shorts out and get in there and get in the thing and wait for our parents to come home to an empty house. And then they would come in the backyard and we'd be in the trash cans waiting for them to come in to the back to see what was going on. And we'd be breathing through the little bendable straws and then wait to surprise them in great fashion. They'd call out our name, you know, my given name, you know, they'd call us out and we would jump out of the trash can surprise and scare the shit out of my parents, you know. Who would invariably strike back at us with whatever weapon of choice was available. Because as you know, we beat our children. But
yes. Not anymore.
Not anymore.
Can't.
Not in public.
Wait till I get you. Just wait.
You know, no, it wasn't like, yeah, that's like the thing now. We went through different eras. It was just like outright beating in public. And then it used to be like, hey, you know, wait till I get home. And then you'd get home and then now it's like, you know what, knock it up. I said, stop.
Yep.
And then you, yeah.
Yeah, and then retreat.
Yeah, then you retreat.
Cheap.
But,
headphones on, looking at your phone.
Like, whatever.
Yeah, just
whatever.
Whatever.
But the other thing we used to do was a kitty cat parachute, which was at some point somebody came out with the plastic bag. So I was in my age, I was part of the awakening period where we went from paper to plastic. And we always had cats. And kitty cat parachute, as you might imagine, was a great fun for us. Not sure for the kitty cat that we had. We had a lot of –
what was the cat's name?
You know, we had a lot of cats.
Because of kitty cat parachute.
Not necessarily because of kitty cat parachute. But we just had a lot of cats growing up. And, oh, my God, what was the cat's name from a commercial from Cats Meow?
Morris.
Morris. We had a lot of Morrises for whatever reason. But we didn't go with Morris 1, Morris 2. It was just Morris.
It was always
the Morris.
Orange
Morris and the blue Morris.
It's like at the ranch, we always had a brownie. There was
yeah, there was always a brownie.
It wasn't Brownie Jr., Brownie no, the second.
Whatever. Just brownie. So yeah. We had a lot of Morrises. And but we would it first began with the G.I. Joes, right? Because we realized that you could launch the G.I. Joes in multiple batches. You could have like a whole platoon of G.I. Joes perishing off our carport roof. Which, yes, we were on the carport roof with no parental supervision. To think of that, probably not the best thing. You know, but there was a 10-year-old supervising the
project. Yeah, he's old. He's in double digits.
But ya tiene 10. He's like, okay.
He can work. If he was at the ranch, he'd be working the corn stand, so it's fine.
So we somehow figured out that we could – and it was funny because I think the cat just joined us up there one day and, you know, checking out the whole thing and – you know, he's looking over the carport roof and watching the G.I. Joes fall down and, you know, he's looking at that and we started looking at him and he's looking at us and we're looking at him and he's looking at us. And, you know, we had a seemingly endless supply of bags. So we, the first launch, I don't remember the first launch, but at some point we realized that it was good with two bags. On kitty cat's arms. So we figured out a harness system for kitty cat. And we just launched him off the roof. And he kitty cat's going.
Did it help him at all? Did it slow him
down? No, it did. It did. He'd be like screaming. And then parachute would go off. And he'd get down. And then he's like running with the bags, which was that was the tough part. That's where I felt bad.
I was always. Why did you never combine kitty cat parachute with East LA scuba? You never thought to do that?
No, just never. At one point we were jumping off the carport with umbrellas. I remember we did that too.
You know what? I was just going to ask that because I always wondered if that would slow you down.
If it did, it was really minuscule.
You need one of those. You need like a patio umbrella.
Well, we didn't golf in East LA.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Mexicans don't. We don't even buy the umbrella that will automatically open. That's too expensive.
That's expensive.
That's what white people buy.
Well, you know what it is. it rains 20 days out of the year in Southern California, right?
You buy the crappiest little.
Right, the one that'll get blown out of it with a hair dryer.
Yeah. Exactly. So, yeah, you're jumping off of that. You need two of those, or you need, like, a patio umbrella, really.
Yeah, we could probably pull it off with a patio umbrella. But, you know, now
you have kids now. Now is the time to answer these questions.
Well, you know what? I will try to do that, but I think I've probably exceeded the weight limit.
Well, I was saying you have kids now. You let them do it. Let them.
Yeah, you know, but my wife won't let me.
Just climb up there.
You know, we get afraid. This in this day and age.
The worst that happens, they jump off the garage.
You know, this is the beauty of having four children.
Your number three would do it.
Oh, without a doubt. Not even thinking about it. You know,
she would definitely.
My first would go, no.
Yeah.
And my second would go, that's dangerous, Dad. And the third one would be like, okay.
Yeah, just run off.
Do I get to use Hello Kitty one? Sure. You can use the Hello Kitty umbrella.
That's what kids are for, to do all the stuff that I never got to do. You know what I mean?
No,
live vicariously.
We have to, you know, I certainly have to edit what I tell them to do because, yeah, they'd be.
Yeah, I'm always amazed at me when I hear myself telling my daughter not to do something and I was like, I would have done that. Like, I would have. Mm-hmm. I would have. Oh, don't go.
I was talking to people about telling some folks about my grandfather's ranch in Mexico, and it's, you know, the middle of nowhere in Mexico, and for whatever reason, you know, we burned a lot of things out here, so there wasn't a local fire department out there, and I was telling somebody the story of how we were out there and we found matches, or probably took matches, I don't remember. But we had some matches, and he had a lot of hay for the animals, and we found the hay, and we decided to take. And there's these very long sort of shafts of hay, and we decided to light each end and kind of use them like swords with each other. Right? Just, you know, maybe, you know, it was before Star Wars, I guess. Maybe, you know, maybe like lightsabers, right?
Yeah,
swing them at each other, and you know it. Dry as all hell, and I remember, yeah, we lit the hay bale on fire, and it was amazing. It was amazing. It went up like, I can't tell you how.
Like a dry bale of hay?
Like a dry bale of hay. It went, and it made a sound, and then for a few seconds we looked at it, and mind you, we were experts in damage.
Of course.
So we knew exactly what to do. We knew where the water – they kept the water for the pigs. So we went running to get the water for the pigs. And my parents are sitting in like the little portico that my grandparents had, and just see us running back and forth with buckets of water. Parents just didn't get up. They thought, well, this must be par for the course until they smell the hay burning or something on fire. And at that point, one of my cousins ratted us out, and you know they all came and helped put it out. But for a while, but it was funny because we were like, "Yeah, we got it under control."
Just one at a time with a bucket, yeah, back and forth.
We were doing bucket book. Hey, it worked in Huckleberry Hound.
Sure, right?
Why wouldn't it work?
Huckleberry Hound. Ugh, your Hanna-Barbera's. That was the bottom of the barrel for your cartoons on a Saturday, was the Hanna-Barbera.
No, no, no.
But they were the most plentiful. No, no, the bottom of the barrel was the other one, the Harvey tunes. Heckle and Jekyll and
Casper. Davy and Goliath were really the bottom of the barrel.
Well, that was like Sunday early morning, though.
Because it was the only thing on.
It was the only thing on. Yeah, Saturday.
Hey, Davy.
Saturday morning, you'd wake up and it'd just be cartoons all day, and then Sunday, nothing.
No, we would have – Channel 5 used to have that guy who was a Popeye guy, remember?
Tom Hatton.
Tom Hatton. Hey, Tom Hatton. Hey.
Yeah, and he would write the – send in the squiggle.
And he would do a cartoon. He was an amazing guy.
And then –
It was a very different time.
Yeah, those were our kids' shows. We just talked about that. Somebody brought up Romper Room the other day. I was like, oh, my God.
You know, the Romper Room lady works for Kaiser Permanente.
What does she do?
A community outreach person. I met her. I was so excited. I was like, I was probably inebriated, but nevertheless, I was so excited.
You mean the I see Jesse?
I see Jesse. I kept, I was drunk, so I kept saying, I see you. And she was like, okay, stop.
She never hears that ever.
Right. I know. I think that she doesn't admit that she's the romper room lady because of that.
I didn't know. Well, they've all gone on. They've all gone on to work in the healthcare industry.
That and the methamphetamine trade. But
is that true? Who's on the meth?
I believe the little Latina girl, Rosa.
Really?
Yeah.
She's on the meth?
Yeah. The other one's into black tar heroin, but that's another story.
Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Breaking Bad come to life.
I don't want to talk about Breaking Bad anymore.
I haven't watched it. I started the first season, and my wife was like, let's watch it together.
It's over.
And it's done now. Now I'm like, can I watch it yet? Because you're never going to. We do that. We get into, and then it's like, wait for me. I want to watch it with you. And then I missed all of True Detective because of that, and I wanted to see it. So
it's funny. I lately my show choices are very, very limited, mostly because of the time with the four kids. But
yeah, there's no time.
I try to make sure and watch Restaurant Impossible with Robert Irvine, Chef Robert Irvine,
mm-hmm.
and Triple D. That's Triple D and Gas Monkey, the Gas Monkey guys. I like those. You familiar with the Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives?
Yep.
Guy Fieri show, and then the guys out of Texas doing the Monkey Garage.
I hate Guy Fieri because of that. He does a Pepto-Bismol commercial right now where he just yells the whole time. Have you seen it?
No.
If you watch any shows on Hulu, Hulu runs ads.
Oh, okay.
And it's the same commercial, like whatever commercial is for that show, it's that commercial for the rest. So I did like a marathon where I was watching, I was trying to catch up on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which is very funny. And I watched like four episodes in a row, and I saw that every commercial break was Guy Fieri yelling at the guy who had indigestion. So I'm over him.
So did it make you buy Pepto-Bismol?
No, it made me want to hate Guy Fieri.
That's good.
But I do like you, Jesse. You are being a denizen of Los Angeles. You know a lot of good places to eat too.
Yes. And, well, I'm also because I'm fat too.
Well, you know, I wasn't going to say that. You look great. I think you look fantastic.
But it's on radio.
But it's radio. You sound fantastic. That's all people.
I sound thin.
You sound good looking. So you're good, man. What are some of your – give me one hidden gem you think in L.A. that not enough people know about as far as food. Any kind of food. Doesn't have to be
– Well, you know, I have some favorites. So if you're talking Mexican, you're talking Ciro's for me over in East L.A. on Evergreen. It's just north of Cesar Chavez.
Okay.
Which used to be Brooklyn Avenue. And
that's what my mom still calls it.
Yeah. And I'm sure there's some holdouts and some of veteranos who still use the Brooklyn term. But it's in between Cesar Chavez and Wabash, and it's in East L.A., and it's some of the most amazing northern Mexican food you're going to find. Authentic. Yeah. Beans, rice, the whole nine yards. You got to go there hungry because you're gonna eat a lot. It's down the street from Manuel's El Tepeyac, the original.
Mm-hmm.
Manuel's El Tepeyac.
The Yak.
And so I don't but they have liquor, they have beer, and Manuel's doesn't.
Yeah.
That's another way of distinguishing whether you're from the neighborhood or not, is if you call it Manuel's or El Tepeyac, because everyone just calls it
Manuel's. Manuel's, yeah.
Yeah. So Mexican that. You know, in terms of Chinese, there's one of my super, super, duper favorites right now is ABC Seafood.
Where's that?
It's in on Hill. It's going to be on Hill, just up the street from Philippe's.
Okay. Is that the one with Slippery Shrimp?
Slippery Shrimp?
Is that the one?
Yeah. You know,
there's one there that everybody loves.
Dim sum is amazing. Not because it's that much better than anything else. It's, you know, it's fairly average, but it's the people serving you. Dim sum? Yes. What is it? Dim sum? Yes. Oh, okay. What is it? Dim sum. Okay, I'll have two. It's absolutely amazing. It's a good price. You know, you get a beer there too. Get some Tsing Sao.
No, rice beer.
No, I'm not going to do that.
That's what that is.
No, please.
Tsing Tao is made from rice.
Really?
Yeah.
I've been educated.
That should be. I think it is rice beer. It is, really is.
But my all-time favorite Chinese place is obviously Full House on Broadway. It has the best black bean sauce in North America. I just like saying it that way. Because in the United States, you know. I've been to Vancouver and stuff.
There's a huge Chinese population.
There's a huge Chinese population out there, but it is the best black bean sauce in North America.
All right. You said it. You called it out. I think L.A. doesn't get enough credit as a food city. I think people think of, you know, New York as a food city, or, you know, San Francisco has a lot of five-star restaurants, or Chicago's, you know, pizza. I don't think enough people give L.A. enough credit. But L.A.'s great for that kind of food, diner-type food. There's a lot of great eating spots.
Well, there's a lot of great – but we have good five-star. We've got a lot of great steakhouses. We've got a lot of great places, you know. And we've got dives. You know, we've got a bunch of different, you know, places to and you know, it's funny because we're denizens of Whittier.
There was just a write-up in the Times about how Whittier is becoming a
foodie place.
A foodie place. And there is. You just walk up and down Greenleaf. There's a ton of places.
I am all for shutting down Greenleaf, a la what they do, 3rd Street Promenade over in Santa Monica.
Yeah.
That would probably be a better idea for them. Parking's impossible to begin with anyway, so just set up parking lots. There's one already. Just set up some parking lots on opposite ends and let people, you know, you could close it down, you know, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Just walk it down.
And people have walk. But that's right. We have horrible city council people here in Whittier. So, ergo,
I just got my ballot. I was like, the same. It's always the same guys.
Well, we need district elections. This at-large system does not work for the city of Whittier. Whittier's growing, right? We're 67,000 people, 67% of which are Latino. So, you know, this is the city's made a lot of mistakes, and I think that you know, the development or the lack of development on Whittier Boulevard is a prime example.
You look at it, drive down, especially since all the automakers or all the auto dealerships have gone.
They're gone, and for God's sakes, what is wrong with synchronizing lights? I'm just curious about that. Why that seems to be a technological wonder for the city. Because you're right. I want to be trapped in front of the old board Ford lot, which God. Has nothing going on.
I just take that little shortcut behind the hospital.
Janine.
Yeah.
Everybody does.
Yeah,
yeah. Yes. Yeah. Which, much to the chagrin of those residents, right?
So, sorry.
Like, you know, you're like, you know. And then there's that stop sign that pops out of nowhere in the middle. You're like, ow!
Yeah.
Look out.
I was making a nice 60 miles an hour.
I was doing 47, and now I have to stop.
In a school zone.
Yes. Those folks, you know, they have a challenge. And, you know, I there's a lot of issues, obviously, with the city that need to be, you know, rectified, and you know, everything from the drilling, you know, development.
Anytime anyone wants to praise the city of Whittier, I always point back to the old movie theater, the old Whittier Theater on Hadley and Whittier Boulevard, which was a gem of a movie theater,
which was ceremoniously demolished
to put a Walgreens up, which there is another 2 miles away in the old quad. So
apparently, there's a lack of pharmaceutical outlets in Whittier. I'm going to note the sarcasm in that statement.
For those of you who don't know, look it up. Whittier had a really beautiful theater, which by the time I came on the scene was actually like a third run. They were literally, it was 99 cents for three movies on like a Friday. You'd go see like Friday the 13th 4, and maybe a Nightmare on Elm Street 2, and a Halloween 6. And
it's a popcorn trifecta.
Yeah, it's a trifecta, but it was a beautiful looking theater. It looked like Pirates of the Caribbean. It was damaged in the Whittier earthquake and then sat. And while they figured out what to do with it, a developer came in and bought the land. And Whittier did nothing, almost little to nothing to save it, even though it had been around since the 1930s.
No, but they made the guy who owned the Union 76 station up in Uptown Whittier put cement and beautify his former gas station that he can't do anything with. Because it's a former gas station, so he's, you know, all that's up on off of, you know, what is it going to be west of Greenleaf?
Yeah, yeah.
On Hadley. That whole area is decrepit, and yeah, I think some of your family live up there, right? they're my family too, and boy, do we love them. But no, you know, that whole area needs to be developed.
You know, it's like the city council. I know this is getting too inside for people that are listening, but you know what? You're going to have to deal with these problems eventually one day. But there are, when you will learn when you become homeowners or wherever you live, that there are parts of the city that whoever's on the city council, they love those parts of the city. It doesn't matter where you live.
Right.
Could be Brea, could be Huntington Beach, could be anywhere, where your town, USA. City council will be in love with certain parts of that city, and they will spare no expense to keep that part of the city looking beautiful and lovely, and the rest of the city can go to crap
and go to hell.
They do not care.
And they don't have synchronized traffic
lights. And there's no god dang synchronized traffic. You know, for such a small, big city, the traffic in this town is awful. Awful.
I tell people we're like Bolivia.
You try to get from...
You have modern vehicles and horse-drawn buggies and some guy in a cart with a burro. I mean...
You get from where I live, which is on the edge of... One edge of town, to get to uptown, literally, if I take the main street, Whittier Boulevard, will take me 25 minutes. It's I live 3 miles away.
I invariably would have clients that would get off the freeway and say... Hey, my offices used to be in Uptown Whittier, right? So they would say, hey, I'll be there, and it looks like I'm getting off the freeway. Should be there any second now. And I'm like, no.
Got about 15 minutes.
I have enough time to go to the restroom.
Yeah, come back. You got about 15, 20 minutes. I don't know what it is about this damn town. I love it and I hate it at the same time. Jesse's looking at his watch.
No, I'm concerned about your daughter.
No, she is at school now, and she will be back. They have early release today, so we've got time for one more segment. So let's take a quick break.
All right,
and we'll come back with traffic talk.
Traffic talk on the 191 freeway. We've got a lot of breakup. It's going to be a really big ugly situation. We got a sig alert coming out. Don't get off the 5 freeway. It's going to be really, really just butt ugly.
We'll be back.
let's continue.
We are back from the break. Segment three, everybody. This is the most exciting one. This is one everybody loves.
Is this the speed segment?
This is where I grill you. I ask you some questions.
Oh, man. Am I prepared?
There was something I wanted to talk about, and I forgot it because we started talking about traffic lights. There's a Doctor Who pen that you have in your hand, and if you want to take any notes, that red composition book is there for you, Jesse Nunez.
I'll just autograph it.
There you go. Thank you. I appreciate that. That's professional. I do that right into the microphone so you hear that we do not edit on this show. Jesse is, of course, busy taking notes right now.
No, I'm just preparing myself with the answers from another guest.
Yeah, I think you're going to see some notes on yoga. We did a show on my friend Priscilla is a yoga instructor. Also, here's an interesting thing about friend Priscilla. Her family's from Mexico. Her mom and dad are from Mexico. She lives here now. Her mom, I've never seen this before, Latina woman, became Muslim.
That is
unusual.
Happening actually a little bit more than you
is that think. Is that true?
Mm-hmm. But you know, hey, it's kind of like when people convert from Judaism.
There you go.
It's the same thing, or convert to Judaism as well. You know, it's all the same God. And so
listen, hippie.
I'm sorry, I went to the seminary, so I should be.
Yeah, let's talk about that. You did go to seminary.
Yes, I did.
How did that go?
Well, I have four children, so.
You know, you remind me of once when I was in the library, I saw a book called I Was a Kamikaze Pilot. It's like, well, not a very good one, obviously.
Not because you failed at that effort.
To don't tell. So, you were the kamikaze pilot.
My book is going to be called, has a certain, actually I'm writing a book, so.
What's it called? Do you want to tell us about it?
I can tell you a little bit about it. It's people think it's a self-help book, but it really is more of a guide for the universe, is what I'm writing.
What's it going to be called?
We're All Fucked Up.
That is the perfect title for it.
It's true. Is it a guide? It's a guide to the universe, and it goes into the different levels of fucked upness.
I call it. Give us the base level. What is the base level of?
Okay, there's just three levels: fucked up, kinda, and really.
Which is the worst?
Well, really.
Yeah, and then
that really is. You need to be on medication.
So.
Kinda is the person who's got some kind of social anxiety disorder and is sort of, but can tamp it down enough so where you can have a job and, some kind of income and, modicum of a respectable life.
I'm laughing so hard my nose is running.
Yes.
So my lovely wife is here.
She's left the room.
She left. When she comes back, if she could bring me a Kleenex, that would be fantastic.
I'm sure she has a set of headphones on that's going to be able to hear you.
You can still hear my voice outside of the headphones.
I'd like to think not.
That would be great. Yeah. I'd walk around with headphones all day.
I would too.
So other people couldn't hear me.
For other reasons.
Other people couldn't hear me. How far are you in this book?
About 11,000 words.
And what is your research based on?
It's all anecdotal.
So this is like a Republican report on global climate change, basically.
There are a lot of real life examples in the book. That was a good whisper, by the way.
Did you catch it?
Yes.
Keep going. I was listening.
No, something about methamphetamine. I have no idea. What
speed. It's my favorite. That's my favorite Keanu Reeves movie.
Methamphetamine. Oh, yes. That was great.
Dennis Hopper, young Sandra Bullock.
I thought you were talking about Point Break.
That is a great. People love that movie, and I don't quite understand why.
I don't know either.
Got a renaissance,
but that's okay. It features the Renaissance man himself.
Keanu Reeves. Did you enjoy the Los Oscars?
I actually thought it was pretty funny. But I like a different take of humor.
I know a lot of people didn't like La Ellen.
At the end of the day,
that's a tough job, though. That's a tough. Thank you.
Mario is now ceremoniously blowing his nose.
I'm not blowing. I'm rubbing.
He's rubbing his nose. It's quite.
Why are you giving me a look?
Because she's married to you.
Yeah, she knows. She knows. She's seen me blow my nose. My lovely wife is here. What did you ask me, honey? She's not saying a word. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
She is a smart woman.
You are. You, Jesse was talking about the Oscars.
I like Ellen. I think she's funny.
I thought she did a good job, and it's not an easy job. Were you? What did you think of your man, Alfonso Cuarón, taking the Best Director prize? Well,
you know, the fact that he didn't say thank you to my good friend Jesse Nunez.
Were you bummed out?
I was a little bummed out about that. Voiceover work, it's my voice on his first domestic movie, or the first movie that gained him notoriety was Y Tuvo Más También.
Yeah, yeah.
So I did all of – that's my voice on all the domestic commercials.
Is that really?
Yep. Y Tu Mamá También.
Is that true?
Yeah, I can do the TV guy or the movie guy.
My wife sent me a note. I love you too. Thank you, sweetheart.
From the director of.
Do you do movie guy voice? I like movie guy voice.
Movie guy voice goes a little something like this.
In a world.
If you can see how you imagine your life, you'll want to. I'm sorry. The lyrics from Journey are a little bit. Is this Neil? Who wrote this? Neil Sean or was this Perry? Steve Perry.
So that's Steve Perry before he became Afraid of Lights? Or no, who was that? That's the guy from Styx, right?
That was Styx. Different band. Different
same,
70s band.
Same.
Who? I don't remember how the song goes.
So I don't even remember.
Hopefully your folks will be able to.
There are people yelling.
Anything is possible.
There are people yelling at you right now.
If you can see how you imagined your life, you'll want your dream now. From the director of Middle School Musical, Alfonso Cuarón. Yeah, that's. But yeah, actually, it's funny. So I was a bit shocked that he did not thank me. But other than that, you know, actually, the cinematography on that was pretty.
It was a great movie, and to be able to pull something like that off. But I love that he and Guillermo del Toro, all these great directors are coming out of Mexico right now.
Yes, they are all part of the. You know, Mexico has a very much intelligentsia. The city itself, you know, it's 30 million people, so yeah. it's about as big as California. You know, in the size of San Diego, city the size of San Diego. But no, it's got its intelligentsia, and I think that's you know, you're starting to see that. I mean, those guys are, you know, they have an amazing access to training, mm-hmm. and you know, look, that's why people come to this country, right?
Yeah, for sure,
for that opportunity. You know, the but
no, they don't, Jesse. They come here to take our jobs and leech off of us.
That's right. They're all on welfare.
They're all on welfare, all of them. They're just having their anchor babies.
Apparently, they're all doing that in Kentucky because that has the largest amount of per capita welfare recipients in this country. That's right. The Appalachia is there. Oh, I forgot about that.
They're coming here.
We're all rushing to the Appalachia.
They're having babies. And they're just, that's all they're doing. Well, you know what's funny, though? We'll go back to this. We would talk about it in the first segment. It's always, and if you study any of the, if you study immigration in this country, going back to, you know, we'll just start at the gold rush and you start talking about, you know, the Chinese immigrants or the Japanese immigrants or everybody's coming in. It's always the same rhetoric. The rhetoric hasn't changed in 150 years.
No, it's just that the majority is changing.
That's what it is.
And so the difference in that type of immigration from before, and this is where technology plays a big part now, but when you immigrated from Italy or Germany or what have you, from Europe or from China, you know, from Asia, you know, the distance was an impediment to have a continuous flow of information from your home country. And in the case of the United States and Mexico, the proximity to the border was, you know, just the proximity to your country of origin was so easy. You know, you go back and forth and what have you, and so that there was a different, there was a rush to assimilate, and with the older immigrants or the folks that went through Ellis Island and what have you, and you know with Mexicans in particular, it was more of an acculturation, you know, process that's gone on, and I think that's it's a continuous flow because you know we have. You know, we're blessed with some of the genes of our ancestors, which means we have, high birth rates and low infant mortality rates. So, you know, God bless them. You know, we make a lot of babies and they survive.
Yeah.
And I think that's certainly one of the things that, you know, we continue to do that.
Thank you, Jesse, for carrying the torch.
You know, I'm helping. I'm helping become the majority. And so it's a different type of immigration. And you know what? It's interesting. And again, I refer back to it. The language is secondary. You know, it really comes back to the culture. And it's in very ways a sort of a renaissance going on because you have such an influx of technology allowing you to see what's happening in Mexico or what's happening in your hometown in Michoacán or Durango or whatever wherever your country of origin is or your state of origin, that there's a what's very, very interesting is there's a type of norteño music, regional Mexican music, that focuses on a lot of the narco banda stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Which is all the narco banda music. And a lot of it's produced here. The majority of it is produced here, actually. And you have artists that live here that go to these ferias and, you know, the fairs and the little and all these cities in Mexico. But they're ostensibly American citizens for the most part, you know, which is an incredible I don't think people pick up enough on the social implications of that.
I think that's part of what the problem I think people have. And, you know, when I was talking about the rhetoric, it's always the same. You just change whoever the victims of the rhetoric is what changes. And in our case, meaning, you know, the brown people, the Mexican people, or, you know, anybody from Latin America, anytime you hear things about there's, you know, people saying that, you know, this is the death of American culture, it's always the white culture, like somehow we're going to replace whatever they're doing, you know, it's all going to be like, but I think that we hold on to certain things. But like you said, I mean, I'm a second generation and my Spanish is terrible. Mm-hmm. You know, we end up, you know, this country culturally has such a huge effect on us that I don't think that it lasts longer than a generation or two. I think
in terms of language, what's interesting is language is the first to go because, again, language is acquired and culture is inherent. Right. Mm-hmm. So there's and I don't mean to sound like a sociologist. Hi, welcome to Sociology Radio.
get a little NPR. It's OK.
You know, it's OK. Hey, then I need to change my name, you know, to Gutra Millipad or something. Hey, they have such great names.
Like I tell people on this, it's not always going to be lightsabers and cosplay. All right, guys. Sometimes we talk about.
I know they're all disappointed. He did mention a lightsaber earlier.
Sometimes we talk about the issues.
What is interesting, again, culture is inherent and language is acquired. There used to be such an emphasis on what made you a Latino, and that was probably propagated by American, you know, or I'll say non-Latinos, because that was an easy way to sort of put you in a bucket or put you in a particular area. And so I think that that's certainly one of the things that for us as a diaspora is to look at as a culture, to look at the fact that we have this diaspora that's really wide-ranging, you know, from people. The language, you know, doesn't really make you part of the culture.
Yeah.
You have people, you know, there's sort of five groups. The immigrant, the first generation, the second generation, the acculturated. And, you know, they're recognizing the fact that we have assimilated people who don't want to have anything to do with being Latino, you know. And then that's okay, too. But, you know, I hate to break it to them, but they are. you can say your last name is Ramirez or whatever, but, you know, at the end of the day, even the people who aren't, you know, hey, you're Ramirez. Yeah,
I do call people Ramirez all the time. That is, I'm glad you brought that up.
I make a sincere effort.
You know, you're speaking of the experience that you're speaking. I can't even talk today, but my nose is running and now I'm all verklempt. But, I just read a book, The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde.
It's a great book.
It is a great book, but
he's a great author,
and it speaks to that because it's about a Dominican kid, and he really doesn't fit in anywhere because he's this really, really, really nerdy kid.
I love Junior.
And he's so good. That's such a great. Yeah, the narrator's awesome. Junior's a great. The book, but it really goes back and it explores his mother's story, mm-hmm. and it talks about something that speaks to all Latinos, the idea of a family curse, and it's a really, really great book. I recommend anyone pick it up. But they do talk about the situation with people from the Dominican, and he doesn't even fit in because he's too nerdy to really fit in with American culture.
Right.
But he's gone so far overboard, and then the Dominicans really didn't. I related to him so much.
It was a great story because it fit in our time. The plastic on the couches, your parents having parties and drinking and dancing in a very small area. You know, I think going back to Dominican reminded me of trips to Mexico.
Yeah, it really spoke to me as far as, you know, the Latino culture, no matter, all Latino culture kind of has that in common. When we bring America into the picture.
We certainly do.
Yeah, we all end up here. And we all want, you know, we all end up looking back to where, you know, for you, obviously, your parents being from Mexico, mm-hmm. it's a lot closer for you. You know, my grandpa left and really never went back, so we didn't have any, you know.
No, we got to enjoy some of the going back. I still have cousins in Torreon and in Santiago Papasquiaro.
And so shout out to them.
Yeah, shout out to them I'll put this on Facebook and then they'll.
Una shoutear.
They'll give me a shoutear. And they don't even call it Facebook. They call it Face. Oye, ¿estás en la Face? Like, oh, okay. That's pretty funny.
And they don't call it cara?
No, they don't call it libro de cara. Libro. That's moronic. They call it la Face. Oye, ¿estás en la Face? ¿Dónde lo vas en la Face? ¿En la Gram? El Twitter.
Twitter's the best place to get your
Twitter,
news. If you're
Twitter.
Not on El Twitter.
I use Twitter as a news feed. I don't really communicate.
It's beautiful for that, though. It's people that aren't on board, I'm like, you just don't, you gotta, and I hate to be the guy that says you don't get it, but you really don't if you don't understand.
If you're trying to use that as a method of communication.
That's your problem. You know, we didn't even talk about it. Your Dodgers this year, what do you think?
Awesome. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, people ask me what my favorite basketball or football team is. I always go, the Dodgers.
The Dodgers.
It really don't matter.
Los Doyers.
Los Doyers. Although we can't use that because we've just violated the copyright.
Is it a copyrighted name?
Owned by Frank McCourt.
You can't say Los. He doesn't get to.
He. Somebody got it for him.
No. Mm-mm. That's like you copyrighting the fact that my mom calls her La Edie Gourmet instead of just Edie Gourmet. You can't copyright that. Mira La Edie Gourmet, ahí está con.
Well, apparently Frank did. But, you know, he's too busy trying to figure out his parking lot scenario.
That's the new football stadium, man, for the non-existent team we're going to get.
Oh, that's going to go on and on forever. I'm sorry. We don't need a football team in Los Angeles.
We don't. We get all the games now. Who cares?
You get more games not having a team.
Yeah.
It's a second major media market, so you don't. Sorry, that was geek speak. the what?
10 o'clock Sunday morning.
You get a 10 o'clock. You get a 1 o'clock. You get the 4 o'clock game, and then you get a Monday night game. You get more games than you can imagine. You would not get any of these games because they'd be blacked out.
Yep. I remember when the Raiders were still here.
Our people would not show up for the game. We won't buy tickets, and we do a bum rush thing, so we wouldn't get it televised.
Yep. Time Warner, I want my Dodgers. I went to get my free Dodger dog yesterday just so I could tell them I want my
You should. I think that's important.
Well, listen.
We've got a great team. Starting pitching is amazing. We have 4 starting outfielders. I'm all for my plan is to – if Donnie Baseball asks me, I would rotate them all.
I'd rather have you manage the team than Donnie. I still don't trust Mattingly.
But, you know, you rotate the 4 outfielders so that each one gets a day off every 4th game. They all can play all positions. So you go into, October, and you've got guys playing 120 games. Think about it. Matty didn't play more than 40 games last year. Ether got hurt. So did Carl. So none of those guys. And then we called up Yasiel in April, right? So he didn't play the full 160. So – you know, have them all play 120 games. You come into October with the most refreshed outfield, you know, murderer's row.
There you go.
Coming in to whoever we're going to play. And those guys, you know, it's a tough deal. You know, I know they're premier athletes, but it's a tough deal to do that.
It's a lot of games.
Go into the season with that. You know, Beckett comes back. You know, Chad Billingsley comes back. You know, it's going to be quite interesting. You know, we've got 4 amazing starters. The long relievers, the challenge, I think you know, Billingsley and Beckett could fill that role. You know, Billingsley is always good. He was good for 4 innings, and then the 5th inning would come, and you're like, get the bullpen ready. it was a mental thing, man. He'd only throw like 40 pitches. He was like lights out, and then the 5th inning would come, and he'd like fall apart. So, you know, I'll stick him in at long relief. But, man, I mean, if you think about it going in reverse order, you know, Kenley Jansen's amazing. Brian Wilson and Howell are going to just, you know, you got a lefty and a righty throwing you junk and all kinds of stuff at you. And then you got Kenley Jensen throwing you fireballs. You know, I mean, you look at it, we're solid through 7, 8, 9.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, that long relief role, it's going to be a little bit of a challenge. You know, I would have kept Chris Capuano, but you know, he wanted to start and go somewhere else and probably wanted too much money. You know, saying too much money in the Dodgers right now is pretty funny.
Yeah.
My concern is probably catcher. AJ Ellis goes down. We don't really have a good backup. You know, we had, what is it, Montero, I think we brought in. You know, we brought in somebody. I don't even know who that is. I'm concerned there. This Alex Guerrero situation at second base, it's sketchy, but you know what? We had Steve Sachs. People forget, you know, people somehow forget that we've suffered through really bad fielding.
You know who loves Steve Sachs? Anybody sitting behind first base.
There is a wonderful picture that I saw, and this is, you can imagine why.
Whoever had those season tickets.
They loved it, man. You'd see the whole, they'd all rise up try, with their gloves ready when he would throw to first base. It was absolutely amazing. And then you'd wonder why the guy had issues, you know, and then you're like, mm. But, you know, he's got a good bat, you know, and so,
yeah.
You know, and listen, I mean, you know, we've got an amazing, you know, third base, shortstop all the way around. We have an amazing team. But like they say, it's amazing on paper until the first game is played. You know, it's going to be what, Sunday or Monday in Australia?
In Australasia.
Yep, I'm setting my alarm clock. I'll have Zach wake up at 1 o'clock in the morning, and we'll watch the game.
You won't be able to. You don't have Time Warner.
Oh, that's right. I don't have Time Warner. No, it's called Sportsnet. That's what the Dodger Network's called.
Is that what, you don't have it though?
No, I don't have it.
So you're screwed.
I'm going to watch it on.
We can listen on the radio.
Well, I'm going to do stick figures with Legos.
Have you seen someone? Someone has recreated. It was years ago, but it made its round on the internet again. Someone played the old Nintendo baseball and recreated the whole ninth inning of 86. No. 86 with the Mets and Buckner.
Oh. Buckner
with the, and it's Vin Scully announcing it.
Right.
Oh my God, it's awesome! You got to look it up. Just look up 86 World Series Nintendo. You will love it.
They should recreate the Gibby homer.
Oh, yeah. You know what?
I know we got to close, but I will close with this story. So my uncle had died.
Yes.
Not now, but
I'm sorry to hear that.
Back then. So my uncle had died, and I went. You can find the story on the Sun of Los Angeles. It's on there. But my uncle had died, and so my aunts and uncles were preparing a funeral. And so my mom told me I couldn't watch TV, but I was over at her house and I knew the game was on and I'm listening on the radio and I know it's, you know, intense. So the dining room and kitchen were separated before in my mom's house. And so in the living room, I had the TV on and we had one of those old TVs, those console TVs. So when I turned it on, it would make this sound, right? So I turn it on and boom, and they don't notice. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So you know, I get the pliers and I change it to the channel. Channel 11. That was it for the longest time. So the game's on and I'm watching the game and Sharperson, right? Was it Sharperson that gets Sharperson gets the little who was one of the great pickups that year. Sharperson gets on base and by just some sheer stroke of luck. And Gibson comes on. And mind you, I don't have the sound on in the TV, right? Because I can't have the sound on. And I don't want mom to know that I'm watching the game. So Sharperson gets on and I'm like, Kirk Gibson comes up. And I go, and in my head I said, he's going to hit a home run, right? And I said, he's going to hit a home run. And then I'm just staring at the TV, and he hits that one where the foul ball, you know, he gets the two strikes right away. And I was like, oh, I was wrong. and my uncle who passed away was a huge Dodger fan. Huge. He was the first guy to take me to the Dodger game. And he goes up, and as soon as he hit it, I screamed like a little girl. And scared the crap out of everyone in the dining room. My mom comes flying in, and I couldn't even talk. I was like, "All right, and she's looking at me like, you know, one of those. As soon as your aunt leaves, I'm going to beat you. All right. I kept saying that over and over again. And I thought I cried.
It was worth the beating.
Yeah, she forgot about it.
I always tell that story. I was on the phone with my friend Hiddish. We were working on a project for. We had an English class, and we had a really hard teacher my senior year. And I was in my room, and we were watching it on TV, and I was on the phone, and my buddy goes, "Look, oh shit, look who's coming up!" And I'm like, look, it's Gibson, right? We're like, "Oh my god, here he comes!" And you know, like you said, fouls off twice, and as soon as he hits it, I hear my dad in the den just do like a Ric Flair, like "Woo!" Like, and I like. I just hit, it's gone. And then, like, my friend just drops the phone, like, run. Like, I run. Me and my dad, like, high-fiving each other. I come back to the phone, and I can still hear, like, off in the distance. I found the phone. I'm like, hey, did you see that? I just hear him going, ah! Like, running around the house. Ah, good times, man. They just showed that again on the MLB channel, and they actually showed the whole postseason that year. And I remember being so mad that Canseco – I remember my friend Hiddish comes up to me and he goes, "Can you believe what that asshole Canseco said?" And I said, "What did he say?" He said, "We want to play the real champions. Bring on the Mets." And he's like, we're just so like, "God damn you, Canseco." He was such a – and then so just to see him – and then Hershiser shut him down the rest. People forget that was game one, you know. The Reds had a whole other series.
We had more of the series.
And Hershiser was brilliant that series and struck out Canseco, so that was really
– Bulldog.
At the time for me – you know, that World Series has become legend, but at the time for me, it was more satisfying to see Hershiser shut them down just that way.
I think that was the year of the streak, right?
Yeah. And so it was really, really satisfying. So that's enough Dodger talk. I know we have to cut it short. I'm looking at the clock behind Jesse, and my daughter should be here any second. So I'm going to ask him five quick questions, Jesse. I told you yesterday on the phone, I always have my guests make recommendations.
Sure.
What do you is there a TV or show or movie that you would recommend? It doesn't have to be.
I talked about the TV shows that I watch, and I'm not necessarily sure that other people should watch them. So I will pitch things that are out there that are interesting to me. There's a movie from Richard Montoya, who is one of the three members of Culture Clash.
Mm-hmm.
It's his first big screen deal. It's called Water and Power. So it's about two guys from the neighborhood who go off in different paths. One becomes a cop and one becomes, let's say, a wise guy. And their dad worked for the DWP, so hence the nicknames were Water and Power.
Ah.
So kind of interesting.
All right.
All right. What's the other one?
Next one. We got a book or a magazine that you
book or a magazine. I do my magazines now are on the flip.
Oh,
on the phone, which is great. But in terms of books, I was just rereading A History of California by Kenneth Starr, which is a very esoteric piece of work that everyone should read once every 2 years just to remind themselves that they live in the greatest state in the Union, which we should secede from the Union. But that's another story. That'll be another show.
We should just we would cripple the rest of the country.
We would. It'll be like losing Crimea. Crimea, California starts with a C. What I've been reading lately, I reread, just recently, Al Franken's, Rush Limbaugh's A Big Fat Idiot. Still very, one of the funniest books I've ever read in my life. It's pretty funny. All right. So what's the other?
Number three, music or, I say album or artist all the time.
Album or artist. You know, lately I've been into bluegrass, for some reason. So I'll recommend Chromeo.
You know, there's a time when speaking of bluegrass, there's sometimes you just want to hear some hillbilly music, man.
Alison Krauss is an amazing woman. There's Waylon Jennings, which are a very funny take on the name.
That's funny.
They're very, very good. I like a lot of that stuff. I like, you know, I'm into a lot of different music. But the new Chromeo album is really, really good. I like that. I like that sound. It's kind of retro. Reminds mm-hmm. me of... you know, what, maybe what, gosh, who would that be? They'd be like Air, sort of into that space.
Okay.
But they're very good. I like that.
And then number four, I always ask if you're using a tech or a piece of app or gadget that you like to recommend in the piece.
Yeah, Flappy Birds? I can't recommend
You can them. Recommend Flappy Birds.
I have no idea what that is. No, I'm just kidding. You know what it is. I don't want to.
Want to recommend Minecraft to everybody out there?
I'd like to recommend something called Jeopardy. No, the biggest thing that I've used lately is Flipboard.
That is very nice.
It's a very good piece of work.
Yeah.
I like the way they did it. And they just made a deal with CNN, so they're taking over CNN's content.
Are they really?
Yeah, so it'll all be up on there.
Our friend Robert Carlos, I think he listens. He's the one that told me about Flipboard a long time ago, a while back.
Yeah, I've been using it since I got this phone, probably about a year and change.
That's a huge – that is not a phone. That is a laptop you hold up to your
this
ear.
This is a communication device. The Samsung Note – Galaxy Note 2.
Biggest phone ever. Number five, I just say whatever you want. If there's anything else that you haven't touched upon you think that people should know about.
They should all be mindful of the fact that the world is coming to an end tomorrow.
Okay. And this airs the day after. So
so you missed out on it.
Really sorry.
I'd like to leave them with some positive messaging. If you can see how you imagine your life, you'll want your dream now. Then you know that anything is possible.
That is good voiceover work.
Because it's not who you are. It's where you want to go.
You got a little Edward James with it right there.
DJO. I can do a little Eddie almost. Surprise.
His nephew.
Staff performance.
His nephew was a guest on the show.
One. Really?
Yes. His nephew is a...
But who isn't his nephew?
Yeah, it's true. We're all Latino. We're all related somehow. His nephew is a... In his spare time, he's one of the guys that likes to be one of the monsters at Not Scary Farm.
That is living the dream.
That is. He's been a guest. He's huge. I'm going to tell him where to find you.
Please let him know I live at 3249. I'm sorry. I live at 11219 First Avenue. Tell him my name is Mike or Sue. There you
go. All right, Jesse, it's been a pleasure, man. I really thank you for coming and helping out. You helped me out. And you were a great guest on top of it.
I try to make every experience it's the last experience.
The Jesse Nunez experience. That's the name of your book.
What?
The Jesse Nunez experience.
I'm thinking that should be the name of the TV show.
Or the band.
The Jesse Nunez experience. No, the band used to be called the Santeria Devil Dogs.
Is that true? Is that the name of your band?
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you a question. Mm-hmm. Why was Alan Parsons so important that we needed to know that it was his project?
That's a good question. You know,
what did he do anything before the Alan Parsons Project?
Obviously, but nothing of import. Ooh, fancy word. He just could have said nothing important.
Yeah, nothing of import. We're Latinos, okay? We have to let people know how educated we are.
I polysyllabic as often as possible.
That's good. That's a little Nahuatl. All right, everybody. So we're going to say goodbye to Jesse. Thanks again, Jesse.
All right. Peace out, people.
Is there anything you want to leave the people with?
I'd like just to say power to the people.
Power to the people. Si se puede. Stay brown.
As Public Enemy would say, base, how low can you go? Death row, what a brother know.
Once again, back is the incredible Rahm Animal, the untenable, the Public Enemy number one. I'm sorry.
That was some good... That was some good Chuck D. Right
Chuck
there.
D. Thank you.
Flame of the month. Public Enemy number one.
I had a friend that worked at a club where Chuck D. in his later years, went to perform, and he didn't know. This is a younger kid. He didn't know who Chuck D. was, and Chuck D. he said he was working and he bumped into him. He says, "Where can I bring the equipment?" And he's like, "Where can we set up the equipment?" And Chuck, he said, are you with the band? And Chuck, he told him, I am the band.
He would have said something like, I am the band.
Yeah, and he's just like, oh, sorry. So it was a nice little.
He would have said, oh, my faux pas.
Yeah, my Chuck D story. Secondhand Chuck D story. So with that, everybody, until next time, as I always say, this transmission ends now.